Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello everybody and welcome to Internet Marketing episode 152, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. And it's a panel discussion today, and the focus of attention is the internationalisation of search, particularly in the travel sector. All coming up in Internet Marketing.
So I'm joined in the studio today by two guests who are going to be speaking about how to kind of internationalise and export your service if you're doing quite well in one country currently and you're looking to expand further into the world, but with a particular focus on the travel sector, because I know quite a few of you kind of operate in that sector. So I'm joined today by Graham Bedford-Hume, sorry I always pronounce your surname wrong, he's a regular friend of the show, he's the Digital Insights Manager at Site Visibility. We're also joined today by Lee Hayhurst, the editor of Travolution, which is kind of the go-to site and magazine for the travel sector. And they've recently had an edition with a big feature on exactly this topic. So I'm hoping there's a few areas we can go into there. So with no further ado, I'll hand over to Graham to talk about some of the areas that he sees if internationalisation and particularly internationalisation of search is on your agenda in 2012.
Hey, thanks, Colvin. Today I was kind of hoping to look at some of the planning that you might partake if you're looking to sort of internationalise your SEO, if you're looking to export your model to another country, whether that be a country which speaks another language, perhaps, or perhaps the language isn't going to be changing so much, and some of the sort of opportunities there and some of the threats. So I was hoping to have a chat about sort of search engine localization, or maybe targeting particular search engines, or actually targeting the countries which are going to be most valuable to you. Maybe having a little look into sort of the technical hosting side of things. I know that's a side of sort of international SEO, which some people, sometimes get a little bit mixed up with. I think that's fair to say. Maybe then looking into keyword strategy along with content and link building. To make the most of the sort of resources that you're going to be spending in those other countries. We're pretty happy with that side of things. So, I mean, with the search engine localization, I'm particularly interested in the existing audiences that a website has. So perhaps, you know, if you're selling widgets in England and you've got lots of people in Germany searching, finding your site for the term widgets, is that going to be a good audience to be, is it worth saying, okay, oh great, you know, Germany, obviously, we already have that audience there, so we should be rolling out to that country.
I think what we've heard from various players in this area is in travel, you will have your UK site operational, that might be a .com, might be a .co.uk, and it'll be in English, of course. But there's nothing stopping anyone from Scandinavia, for instance, where English is spoken widely, to find you on Google, and they will find you, and understand you, and understand the site, and they're trying to transact with you. So you've got to be quite keen on that analytics side of things. Where is your traffic coming from? If you suddenly find you get plenty of traffic from Sweden and Norway, etc., then there may be an argument then to say, you know, do we need something a bit more localised there? Do we need a local presence? Do we need a site tailored to that audience? I guess if they're coming to you anyway and they're transacting, maybe the answer to that is actually no, that your site
is already
doing the job.
Absolutely.
But of course, you'll never know until you actually target an area, whether you can do more, I suppose. But that you get a feeling that a number of companies are basing their expansion strategy on that, saying, well, where's it coming from now? And is this a potential market for us?
Yeah.
The difficulty there, I guess, is that puts you into a market that possibly is quite saturated. I mean, if they're already looking for you, if they're already on quite a high curve in terms, especially in Scandinavia,
yeah,
where penetration is very high, possibly higher than even the UK, what are the opportunities there? Are they already fairly slim?
Mm.
So
there needs to be a strategic element to it.
What do you do? Do you think, well, we've got better growth possibilities in Poland, but we've got no traffic in Poland, so how do we get a bit from scratch there?
Mm.
And that's the difficulty, because then you would say you would definitely need a local presence.
Mm.
And then that throws up all sorts of problems.
Mm. And that does happen kind of quite frequently as well, where you get that situation where you inadvertently find yourself. I know there's a great example of a kind of job board that we work with that were finding a lot of Australian traffic, particularly, was, you know, performing quite well for them. And then, you know, that connected to other issues led to them kind of setting up out there. And it is kind of, I think people would be, you know, if you've never done this before, go into your Google Analytics or whatever analytics package you're using and make sure that you do go and have a look at that breakdown of country, because you would be surprised. And sometimes it can be like, wow, this is a huge opportunity. And other times it can be kind of scary because you're getting all this traffic from a country and you've got no idea why. And, you know, it raises all kinds of questions and that side of things. But it is, yeah, I think that's a good place to start if you're thinking about where should we be looking overseas.
Yeah. Absolutely. And if we can just stick with this point just for a little bit longer, I'm kind of interested in the idea of finding the best balance of these resources. So, okay, we have a country, we have lots of traffic coming from that country already. I mean, I suppose it's about doing a little bit of research. Are there more localized sites which are doing better business than you? And is that because, you know, they perhaps have a localized website? That doesn't necessarily mean it has to be translated, I think. And I'm interested in that idea. I'd say you're probably going to get a better return, even though, of course, there'll be more outlay, if you find a country which, you know, they're buying widgets by the shedload, but actually they don't have that sort of natural sort of predilection, I suppose, to be searching in English. There are some countries which are more likely to be happy to search for an English term because they know they're going to be able to find what they're looking for. Whereas there are some countries which are going to be much more likely to be searching in their own language. And I think perhaps that might be a real area of opportunity. Perhaps even going through, doing a little bit of keyword research and looking at the, not direct translations, but contextual translations of your particular offering, and seeing, you know, which countries are actually, you know, where are these audiences? Are there countries which are desperately trying to sort of buy your product, but, you know, aren't searching in English because that's not how they naturally behave with search engines?
There's definitely companies out there who will do that job for you. I mean, they will look at seeing what terms and their conversion rates in various markets, and the same English word might convert differently in England than it would do elsewhere. Obviously, I don't think going off to do a French site with a lot of English in it will go down very well, because we know French, you know, you've got to look at these cultural things and you've got to understand the market, and that's always going to be the key thing, is understand the market. We're always going to come back to that. If you're sitting in England and not really you know, doing all the work it needs to do to understand the market, you're never going to really get anywhere. But we know of companies who have got foreign language speakers in call centres in the UK, and what you've always got to bear in mind here is that not everyone, particularly on the continent, is ready to book online yet. So they might want to talk to somebody. And if you haven't got a German speaker in an office, but you've got a German site, it's pointless. But it's happening. People are doing this. And of course, in Britain, we have speakers of all sorts of languages, and especially in places like London, which is very cosmopolitan. It's actually a really good opportunity for British firms, I would have thought, to develop that capability. And on top of that, we've got some really good tech around call centre technology. So you shouldn't forget that putting a website in...
That's the first step.
It could be... It really isn't
the job done. Don't sit back and think, that's it, thank you very much, because there's all that support around it. And I think we're moving into an era anyway of people looking for a better level of customer support from their websites that they interact with. So if you don't give that, you are going to lose against the local, clearly you're going to lose against the local incumbent. And that is, so you probably need to look at each market and get a bit of intelligence, see how strong the local incumbents are. Because you might find they have a strong brand, but they're not doing the job very well.
Yeah.
So the brand is important, and of course your brand is important. And as you know, there's not all brands will translate. We've just had Travel Republic being bought in this country by a Dubai entity.
Okay.
And one of the reasons we think that Travel Republic in particular, apart from they were selling, but they were attractive, was because the name Travel Republic translates.
Yeah.
It could probably go anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Others look at their name to their company, and you think, well, it won't fit. It won't fit abroad. It won't fit with a particular parent. So there's lots of different factors involved in deciding where you decide to move into. And various people have various sort of potted theories. So we did an article. There was the chief executive of Travel Zoo at the Apple Travel Convention said you should move to countries where they drink beer as opposed to wine. Mm-hmm. And that was his kind of potted theory based on the fact that he believes that in countries where people drink beer during a recession and a downturn, they tend to be more proactive. They don't stick their heads in the sand and they carry on marketing through it. Whereas wine drinking countries, they panic, heads in the sand and rein everything in. So it's no good trying to get into those countries at the moment.
I like that theory.
Well, why not? It may work, you know. And I think sometimes it's about business intelligence, isn't it?
Yeah.
And thinking, you know, is it better to go to an English speaking country? I mean, the advantage of being English speaking is that they are dotted around the world, so you can actually have centres across. You can trade 24 hours a day because you can be in Australia, South Africa, North America, and have that global.
Yeah.
But a lot of companies that we talk to and write about, their first step is to Europe, just because it's close. I guess. Mm. I mean, it seems silly when you're online that there's barriers in terms of geography because there isn't, but they do tend to go to Germany, France, Spain first.
Yeah, and I know it might almost seem a bit kind of counterintuitive, but actually when we've been working on international SEO projects, sometimes those that are all in English are actually more difficult to deal with in some ways, because, you know, yes, there's the complexity of localising and translating of the keywords and the content. That is difficult, and I don't underestimate that. But actually, how do you fund them? If you've got two sites, one targeting the US, one targeting the UK, one targeting Australia, one targeting New Zealand, one targeting... How do you make those sites different enough from the search engine's perspective to justify that? Or even, you know, even if you don't worry about the search engines and you've just got a .com and then people go off in their own respective directions, how do you make that then work, that when the person gets on that hotels page, they know that it's in the right currency and all that? You know, there's all kinds of technical solutions to them, but they're complex, and quite often a solution that solves one problem ends up creating another problem down the line as well.
Because in English, is that nuance of, it's the same language.
Yeah.
But it's not, is it?
No.
You know, even within the UK, you can imagine you could localise a site to a degree that no one's even trying at the minute to speak Geordie. I mean, why not? If that's what you're about, speak Welsh or Geordie or whatever. Now, can you imagine a foreign competitor trying to come in and trying to do that? Mm. It's just nigh on impossible. But there's a similar things in the US. You know, you move between coasts and they speak...
Yeah.
A different language, different words for different things. So I can see that would be actually quite problematic, because that would absolutely mean you have to have that local knowledge, you know.
And they're looking for different things, isn't it? I suppose someone who's going on an international holiday from the west coast of America is perhaps looking for someone who's, you know, in central, you know, the mid regions of the US versus the east coast
that
as well.
That comes down to the content, I think, which we'll probably talk about.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the point that you make about different sort of languages or dialects, I think, and for a native speaker, if that's a fair way to put it, has an opportunity actually to create the content which perhaps specific segments of an audience might be more interested in. So you mentioned, say, you know, looking at Geordie people. And so as well as sort of the wording, I'm sure, and I think you just touched on, that, you know, there are different segments of people who want different things in their content. And so if whereas you probably wouldn't be creating something quite that segmented, there are almost definitely opportunities there, aren't there, to be given particular segments of your audience exactly the content that they're interested in, both to increase the sort of links coming through to your site, you know, assuming that good content leads to good links, which I think we all like to
hope so.
We all like to. And I think, yeah, that's a really interesting point.
It's important in travel particularly because a holidaymaker from Newcastle will probably want to fly from Newcastle Airport, or at least not have to come down to Heathrow or Gatwick. Mm. So that absolutely content there, but you have to get that right, because they look at it and go, I'm not interested in this, I don't want to have to drive or I don't know, taxi to the airport and I'm away. So, so if you go down that route of localising the content, you know, why not give it a real local flavour as well? I mean, localisation is one step on the road to personalisation.
Yeah.
And that's obviously then... The next step, isn't it?
Okay, cool. I was interested because we were going to sort of look at hosting and domains. You mentioned Travel Republic and how there was a sort of an almost inherent movability to it. Like it was easy to sort of export because of the ease of translation, I suppose. I was interested. I was looking at some sort of ideas for URLs with, you know, of course, the keyword-rich URLs are some of the most valuable signals to a search engine. In terms of creating translations of your URLs for specific localizations, is that something you've ever come across?
So you're kind of like, if you imagine, I suppose you're suggesting like the hotels.com being the international one, and then it'd be like the equivalent word is .com,
rather
than hotels.fr. So.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't suggest perhaps it would be used as the core URL, but as perhaps something which would be sort of redirected in some way or another. I'm just interested if that's something that is generally sort of practiced, or whether that would be too damaging to a brand, or if a brand needs to remain entirely intact as it's exported.
I suspect we're moving to a point where you've got to be very careful about your brand. You've got to protect that brand. So try to change the core brand is potentially quite dangerous. You get the .com or .fr or .ge or whatever right, certainly. I remember talking to Hugo Burge at Cheap Flights, and when they decided to go to the States from the UK, and they decided that .com would become, they would have a .co.uk for UK and a .com that would be the sort of the overarching one. He said it was the scariest thing they ever did, but it was the best thing they ever did. That's a no-brainer. I think you've got to do that. I think starting to mess around with a core brand is just you've got to really. This brand is so important, and when you're in a very busy market, it's got to stand out. So I think diluting it is particularly problematic potentially. But I can see there's probably advantages on a sort of big technical search element. but most people don't get that. So it's not a consumer worry that the consumers want to be just assured they're dealing with a brand they recognise and understand. You know.
Okay, sure. Yeah, no, I apologize. It was kind of something going around in my mind, sort of, if you had a very keyword-rich domain name as part of your brand, whether that would be an interesting point. But, I mean, you touched on...
I think I've seen various examples of people creating websites that are within their group but are specific for a destination.
Yeah.
You know, so they're a subset of the parent, and actually, if you go on there, you don't necessarily know where the parentage is, if you like.
Mm.
So I've seen it in crews where they've targeted certain sectors like luxury or something. So I think there's advantages definitely in that. I think as a business, then you've just got to make sure you can manage all those different. If you create loads,
they become their own little brand, don't they?
Yeah, and that must dilute your ability to market that and to have focus on. You can't possibly focus on so many things.
I think it's a good idea if you've got the resources and means to use all of them, isn't it? And it's the kind of, as long as you're not spreading yourself too thin, the wider you go is better. But once so wide it becomes too thin. Yeah. That's when
am I getting the feeling of moving away, moving back into just let's get this really, let's get a strong brand and let's pump that as hard as we can. I mean, we spoke to Last Minute recently. They're on our board, our editorial board, and from what they're saying, they are going back to that call. We're the lastminute.com. We're going to give you last minute hotel sales. Yeah. That's what we do. That's what the brand says.
Yeah.
And they've moved away from that over the years because that wasn't the be all and end all for them. They wanted to do other things, and people wanted to book, you know, a long way out. But they know that actually it's last minute. That's what they're called.
Yeah.
And you know that is what people see them as. Mm. So fighting against that is probably not a good idea.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, we touched there on sort of localized hosting or at least country specific domain names. So I mean the best.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Best practice, I suppose, for SEO in blue sky sometimes is to have localized hosting. So if you're moving to, if we can say Germany, you should probably be looking to host that site in Germany. And to have the specific country domain name, which is
CCTLD, they call that.
Yeah, the CCTLDs. I try to avoid all that. .de, of course, Germany. Yeah. That's going to be sort of the best sort of best practice for that side of things. I mean, I think some companies find it difficult to make that leap, as you've already said. To be having two separate sites, but of course. With all of this, it is about understanding the audience. It's about addressing the needs of the specific audiences abroad. Having that sort of fresh new page, although of course that with it comes these you need the resource to be able to do it. That seems like a great opportunity to create this sort of valuable content for the specific audiences.
I don't know what the decision to host your site in a particular country means that. For you as a business, in a more technical business sense, but there's all, and we did cover this in our last edition. There are tax and regulatory issues that you've got to keep very much front of mind because as soon as you start having a footprint in a country, of course the local tax people want to get a slice and everything. So it's not just as simple as saying, "Oh, I'll just place it there," because you might end up. The knock on the door saying, you're not paying German VAT or something.
Yeah.
And then that can change the model entirely.
Absolutely. And there are country-specific domains. Some countries, and I can't think of any offhand, require you to have
Nigeria,
a physical address.
For example. You can't have a .ng because, that, in fact, that means that's...
I'm sure places like China, because of the way they operate, there's very strict rules about... And they, trying to protect. They don't want someone from abroad just taking everything out of the country. They want to put something in, so that's probably why some of these more far-flung countries are more difficult to get into because the regulatory issues are less of a problem closer to home.
Yeah.
Cool. So I suppose I was hoping to have a quick word about sort of keyword strategy. Have you sort of come across much... From some of the experience that I've had, a lot of people seem to be fairly happy with using direct translations or even machine translations of particular keywords. So have you seen any success from that? Or
I think you see lots of them. They will do the direct translation, but the definite advice is not just to rely on that and to sense check it with a native speaker, and you can get into yourself into a whole heap of problems by just literally translating stuff, obviously, because of the nuances of how people speak and so forth. But you know, there's a number of companies that we talk to regularly who are going into these foreign markets in a big way now, because they aren't going to see the growth in the UK that they've seen in recent years, the market as it is. So the growth is going to have to come from somewhere else, unless they take it from each other, from a competitor. So you've got people like the low cost travel group, very aggressively going into foreign markets, and they're building on the strength they've got because they've got good contacts there, because they're contracting stock out there.
Yeah.
So it's an obvious leap then to sell outbound to those local markets. And I know that they are very keen on their translation, making sure the sites and making sure then that the content is fit for that local market.
And particularly with keywords, it's more what you miss, I found, from our international projects we've worked on. So you might get the direct translation, and there is some danger that the direct translation isn't as direct as you think, and it has double meanings and that type of thing. And that's what people seem to be most scared about when they're making that decision. Yeah. But actually, from our experience, what's more of the issue is if you just make that simple translation, it's the words you miss. Mm-hmm. That's the equivalent. So you might translate, so luxury hotel translates appropriately to what a luxury hotel is, but you then miss the fact that people don't refer using the equivalent term to luxury. They talk about five star, say, as an example you might use in the UK. If someone was coming into the UK, they go, oh, we're all about luxury hotels, but actually more people search for five star than luxury. You then missed an opportunity, even though translation might be accurate. You've kind of missed where actually the search volume is, where how people describe the products as well.
I think I'm right in saying that in Germany they don't really talk about discount.
No.
It's not part of the language. It doesn't mean to say they want to buy expensive holidays.
No.
They don't search for expensive holidays.
No.
They want value, etc. But they use different terms. So... especially the Brits love a discount, and we are very happy with that term. Going into Germany with a discount message just probably wouldn't work. So, it's just another example of making sure that you are understanding.
We found the only way you can do that is by having someone who either is native, or he was born there and has come to the UK, or has learned English, or has spent a significant amount of time there speaking that language. And it's the kind of what you can't get that with is necessarily someone who's kind of fluent in textbook of that language. You need to have kind of spent some time in the country to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Excellent. I suppose that also, I mean, that really applies to the content strategy that you're going to sort of adopt for the both the site content and perhaps for content which you might be trying to encourage inbound links or to bring perhaps new users in who are looking for specific information. We all sort of know how Panda has affected the all industries, but with the travel industry, of course, with some aggregators and booking engines. In some cases, we've seen sort of issues where some sites have stopped, ranking as well as they did. And now I think people are more and more trying to adopt a much more, I suppose, solid content strategies. Have you guys sort of come across anybody who's really managed to turn around after the Panda update?
I don't have any sort of specific examples. I mean, I know plenty of companies that were really hammered by it, and I think their natural inclination is to turn to social media and trying to get a bit of unique user-generated content. Yeah. And there's been various attempts to do that. I remember on Holiday Group one time were paying people to do videos from destinations from their holidays. Just a small amount, just a little incentive to just do it. You've now got quite a I think it's going to be a growing thing with TripAdvisor becoming more and more under scrutiny is with reviews and these automated review sites that email you back and say, you know, can you just post a review quickly and it's a verifiable review because they've got the customer's details. So I think you're going to see a lot more of that kind of thing because that is constantly update new content. It's not rich. It's someone saying, yes, that was a good holiday or was it poor or was average or whatever. But it allows these companies to have that just constant tick of new stuff on their site, and it's genuine, and it also involves a third party, so the search engines rank that slightly higher. So you're definitely going to see a lot more of that, and there's companies like FIFO and Revu coming into the travel market now, saying that you know if you're not happy with the way your brand is being reviewed on third party sites, work with us, and we can help you. Improve that ranking, improve your reviews, improve your ranking on search engines, and verify the people who are doing it. So you're not just party to the whims of whoever wants to review your product. You know,
that's interesting. I mean, I suppose it would be quite interesting to see how different sort of localizations sort of relate or engage with these sorts of reviews. If perhaps you know whether some countries are more likely to be reviewing, or you know perhaps with different levels of sort of detail.
I suspect it comes. It's an 80-20 rule wherever you go. That 20% of your customers are prepared to engage in that way and review. The 80% are the quiet majority who are the consumers of reviews. They'll consume it, but they're not really bothered about. And that may always be the case, no matter how much it's pushed as being a good thing to do. So you've got that active 20% who and it's really important you nurture them in some way. And what might sort of interesting is that as things become more international, is our reviews written by a French customer or a Spanish customer, even if they're translated, are they relevant to an English audience, to a British audience? And I don't know the answer to that. I suspect they look at things differently, as we've already said, and maybe not. So you might have a situation where you have to offer your reviews as a searchable review. So you only you filter out the people you don't think are going to be talking your language. Mm. Although that's difficult because I think sometimes the internet can just aggregate things into the middle ground, because you're just saying, I want to listen to people who I already know I want to listen to. Well.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that point completely. But I suppose that also then ties into the localization becoming personalization as well, doesn't it? Is that actually, I see what you're saying, that kind of someone from a different country and speaking a different language, their review and their perception of the place might be quite different to mine. But if they're from a similar demographic and looking for similar things, so a business traveler might be looking for something very different from a family who's looking for something very different from a romantic weekend. And actually, when I go on TripAdvisor and someone complains there was a lot of kids there, and if I'm in for a family holiday, that's actually not necessarily such a bad thing, is it? You know, and
that requires a huge amount of content to be able to splice it up like that and to get enough of it to give you a genuine view. You know, and not enough people have got enough of that stuff. I mean, obviously TripAdvisor dominates in this area, and the more they dominate, the more other companies have to use them, and that's potentially problematic. But I don't know that many individual companies have enough of that, of their own data on their own product, to really say genuinely they've got enough there to make a decision based on the aggregate. You know, it's a bit of a risk. You're doing off two or three reviews, which you know, isn't really enough, is it?
Okay. Cool. I suppose again that kind of leads quite nicely, especially looking at the sort of personalization, into our last sort of the last bit that we were going to sort of cover with link building. I know this is perhaps kind of getting on towards the more technical side of things, but I'm sort of interested in the the ways that perhaps international SEO, so an SEO in another country, say somebody in Russia, has a very different approach at link building to perhaps UK SEOs, which I'm interested in. But I suppose for me, creating sort of relevant, high-quality content, which is at least aimed, targeted at your audiences, is always going to be a great place to start building links, to be encouraging people to link back to you. And I suppose you might also be sort of looking to be using native speaking, somebody who understands search behavior and the behavior of web users in that specific location, in order to, get the right links from the right places, somebody who has real experience of SEO in that country, to try and sort of source a fair proportion of links from that country, which is, again, a great signal.
Yeah, I mean, before you get down to the fact that different countries potentially have different search engines, even just assuming you're working in a country where Google is the market dominator, which is the case in most countries, but not in all countries, that there are different parameters. So, for example, in certain countries, in the campaigns we've worked on, we found, okay, well, you might use article syndication as one of 20 different approaches you use to build links in the UK, but if you're targeting a country where there aren't article syndication sites, which there aren't in a lot of countries because there isn't a developed SEO market that there is here, what do you then use to replace that in your link building arsenal? Or, and like you said, I know a campaign that you've been involved in, Graham, in kind of that had a Russian connection, that the approach used in certain Russian campaigns is probably what you could describe as perhaps more aggressive, and the line between white and black hat is perhaps located in a slightly different place to where it is in the UK-based search engines. And, if you're working on a search campaign particularly, there's the kind of, yes, you've got to have the localization to get it right, but you've also got to understand search in that marketplace. And that's a kind of a learning curve for people who are trying to offer those services internationally, which I suppose some of the listeners are. But equally, if you're kind of offering a service and you want to promote yourself in a different country, you can't just take your strategy from your marketing strategy from one country and translate, just plonk it over into a different country in the same way you can't with your website. Have you seen, Lee, some of the travel companies, have they taken quite different approaches to how they've marketed themselves? Not necessarily just like, SEO, but are they kind of, is lastminute.com, how they present themselves in one country, quite different to other countries? Or to go back to the cheap flights example, how do cheap flights target Germany in the same way? If you talk, say a little bit that the discount is a different way there. Is there kind of any notable examples there where they kind of promote themselves in quite different ways?
It's difficult to know how they operate in these foreign markets because we're not based there. Yeah, we don't necessarily see it from the consumer point of view. Talking to a number of the people who are doing this, in this country, obviously, blogging has become a lot more important and a lot more, I guess, a lot more professional. There are now sort of professional blogging organisations being set up. And I think with the way Google works and the way things operate in this part of the world, CEOs themselves are saying, if we want to protect our brand and potentially market ourselves, our blog helps us to do that because it's got that authority. Mm. And so if anyone else is talking about our brand, if we're not, that's what gets the attention. So we've got to be doing that. And you see a few now starting their own blogs, and it's a link building exercise. Mm. They'll say something interest, push it out to us, push it out to whoever else, and they'll hope to develop a number of links on that and protect their brand in that way. But there's been a massive debate about blogging in the UK and the professionalisation of it, and whether it's here to sort of take over from traditional sort of journalism, traditional articles, and I think for the best bloggers out there, it probably is. They really do get it, and they work damned hard at it, and produce some really good content. So for a lot of, we see a lot of companies who are involved in promoting destinations in particular, and really looking to the blogging community to get them out there, show them the product, and to get them to write those articles, which they know will work for them. Now, whether that's got whether that will then work in other markets, you know, it is questionable. I don't know, but certainly written in English for the UK market, you know, you can see it's a growing trend that people are looking to that sort of third party production of content, you know.
Fantastic. So, I mean, I think, yeah, to kind of sum up and finish up there, there's, yeah, huge potential, particularly in the travel sector, but for pretty much all sectors, really, to kind of look at exporting your model abroad and looking at analytics to understand where you're already getting traffic from can be a great way of doing that. But don't underestimate the potential complexity of doing that, both in terms of technical marketing issues, but also in terms of strategic business issues as well. And yeah, you know, don't assume that just because you've got the localization sorted that your marketing can be transferred just as easily as well. So I'd just like to say, thank you very much, Graham and Lee. Really enjoyed that, and I hope all the listeners at home did as well.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150, and you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.